to left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, what's going on? Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It is Thursday, December 19th. With Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, my name is Pat Steinberg, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hot Stove Lounge is where we're hanging on this Thursday as the homestand continues for the Flames. They play game four of this five-game pre-Christmas homestand against the Ottawa Senators on Thursday night. Hi, Vix. How we doing?
Hello, Patty. We're doing just fine. How about yourself today?
I'm doing well. Good. And no lineup changes for the Flames on Thursday. And I thought that would give us a really good opportunity to kind of dive in on where the Flames are with this lineup right now and where they are with kind of their overall alignment. As it has been a work in progress through the first 32 games of the season to find lines that you're comfortable with on a nightly basis, it feels like, and maybe this is just me, but it feels like this season, maybe more so than many others, it's been a little bit more of every two or three games, there's a bit or a large juggle, whether it be the forward lines or the D pairings. And there's been, you know, we've had one D pairing that stayed the same all year long. Really hasn't been a line that has stuck all year long. It really has been through this first half of the season as the Flames enter game 33 of 82. It really does feel like it has been a work in progress in trying to find combinations that work. And so I wondered, coming off a night where there was some good and a night there was some bad against the Boston Bruins, I wondered if we would see some changes for this game against Ottawa. We're not, other than the goaltending. And believe me, I've seen the Twitter response to the goaltending decision. We'll talk more about that with Wilsey later this hour on the Daily Flames Roundtable. But, The actual lineup, the 18 skaters the Flames are going to go with tonight against Ottawa, no changes, which I was pleasantly, interestingly surprised by. I thought we might see some changes, but I don't mind the fact that we're not seeing those changes.
This is going to sound completely weird, but I both did expect change and didn't expect change at the same time. A fence-sitting comment, if I've ever made one. What I look through what the Calgary Flames have now, particularly in their forward group, and Kuzmenko again will be the odd man out, and we know he's been nursing a little bit of a nagging injury, so his status is still quasi up in the air. But I just look at the group and I go, what would you do? How would you change it? Kuzmenko will eventually have to be worked back in. We discussed that on Flames Talk on Wednesday about when and how you get him back into the lineup. But I just kind of look at the configurations, even if you're keeping the same 12 forwards, for example. Do you move something around? And really, I don't see too much to move. I don't think you're doing anything with the top line because Huberto and Kadri have found something, so you want to keep that going. Coleman, Backlund, Coronado is set and forget, which means you've only got two other lines you can sort of play with. And when looking at the configurations, Sharangovich, Zeri, Pelletier, and Lomberg, Rooney, Dewar, I don't necessarily know what you'd be swapping in and out amongst those six players to shake something up. And then, of course, on defense, too, you get there, and any time that you have a two-goal lead twice in a game and don't come away with mm-hmm. 2 points, that's where it goes, okay, makes sense to swap them some things up. But I've liked Hanley with Weegar when he's been out there. That leaves Miramanov on the outside looking in. Pahal, to me, is just an everyday third-pairing right-side guy, so you're not touching that. And I've liked Bean's game of late, too. So despite the fact that the Calgary Flames were up 2-0 and 3-1 to the Boston Bruins, had, for my money, the best 20 minutes on home ice without scoring a goal, and then things get away from them, you know, mid-second period onward right through overtime to the final minute, I just don't know necessarily what you would do, how you would tinker, what you would change, despite the fact that you're coming off what's probably a disappointing loss.
Well, let's break him down a little bit. You have to like what you're seeing right now with the top scoring line, if you will, the line of Kadri, Huberdeau, and Pospisil. You have to like what you're seeing from that group. I mean, Nazem Kadri has now scored in four consecutive games. Well, see, that's just the second time, right?
He scored second time
four games in a row with scoring a goal. Just the second time in his career, Nazem's done that. So you've got Kadri on this goal-scoring run. You've got Jonathan Huberdeau in a stretch. This has got to be his most productive stretch as a member of the Calgary Flames, most productive kind of extended-ish stretch ever as a member of the Calgary Flames. So you've got those two things going right now. It's kind of hard to break up the line of Huberdeau, Pospisil, and Kadri right now.
Well, you mentioned Huberdeau. He's got 10 points in his last eight games going back to when he and Kadri were put together in the tail end of that Pittsburgh game on November 30th. So he's over a point per game in an eight-game span. I haven't gone to look, but I do have to think that this is the longest stretch of time he's been over a point per game with the Flames, as you mentioned. And then you've got Kadri, who's got 5 goals and 8 points in the same eight games as well. And I know Martin Pospisil hasn't necessarily been as productive as the third person of that trio with just 2 assists in those eight games. But I feel like his sort of style of play really meshes well with Huberdeau and Kadri in being able to be first on pucks, being able to disrupt defenses, being able to push back defenders to give Huberdeau and Kadri a little bit more time and space. So for that combination, yeah, for me, as it stands, you don't touch that one.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too, listening to Ryan Huska when he spoke this morning, and he talked about how not only, like, I think Wilsey asked him, is this, or is Martin Pospisil starting to get back to the type of player he needs to be? And I thought it was interesting the way the coach answered. He said, no, we think he is back there. So they feel like it has gotten back to where they need it to be and now just needs to sustain this. That line has played since November 30th a little less than 90 minutes together at 5-on-5. And what I like is that they have been fed the ozone starts. They're a 75% ozone ratio against D-zone faceoffs since they've been put together on November 30th. That is 67 offensive zone faceoffs against just 22 in the defensive zone. You know what that line is out there to do, and they've made good use of it. They're 117-62 when it comes to 5-on-5 shot attempts when they're on the ice, 65.4% possession. They've outscored the opposition 8-6. They're a little under 60% on expected goals, Wes, and they're 23 to 18 in terms of their high danger scoring chances. That line has been asked to go out and lead the way offensively. They've been given offensive high ground, and they've gone out and done the job. I don't think you want to be messing with that at all.
No, and you kind of cringe to think about it a little bit, but this is as true a first line as Calgary's had over the course of the last couple of seasons. We know Jonathan Huberdeau hasn't necessarily fit, whether it was in the past with Kadri, in the past with Lindholm, in the past with Backlund, and he even made the joke when we were asking him a few days ago about, okay, well, what's clicked with Nazem this time around? And he kind of, I don't know, self-deprecatingly said, well, I've played with everybody else, so now we're just going to roll it back to the top of the list and, and go from there. But for whatever reason, Huberdeau playing perhaps a more direct game, sort of being in the fabric a little bit more as opposed to trying to create from the outside, they've found a connection, and it's given the Flames a luxury that they necessarily haven't had. And you mentioned the offensive zone starts. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those defensive starts happen to be on icings where they're stuck out there having to go back on the draw, because you want to be using Huberdeau, Kadri, Pospisil on offensive zone starts as much as possible, because right now they're your most dynamic trio when it comes to offense generation.
They are, and that's, I mean, I just, it makes sense to keep on using them the way they have been using them, and you've liked what you've seen from them. They've gotten the job done, and I think for the time being, you just want to have them go out there and continue to get the job done. You're not breaking up the Backlund line right now. They put that line back together for the Florida game, and Backlund Declan Coronado and Coleman were great. They were a massive reason, the number one reason why the Flames were able to blank the defending Stanley Cup champions. I thought they did a pretty decent job against, or more than pretty decent, I thought they did a really good job against Boston's top players for the majority of that game against the Bruins as well. So you're not splitting up the backline line either as it stands right now.
No, but let me float this by you just for the sake of discussion, because I agree, Coleman, Backlund, Coronado, it works. Anything with Backlund, Coleman seems to work, and mm-hmm. Coronado's been one of Calgary's best pure shooters this season, so having him on that line really sort of completes that trio. But
like you complete me.
Like I complete you? Okay, I'll take it. Merry Christmas to me. Let's go. Let me float this by you, though, in the sake of the discussion we're having. And
sure.
Surprised, not surprised about lineup changes. How would you feel, and this is jumping the gun a little bit, but how would you feel about flipping Pelletier and Coronado? So you have Pelletier with Backlund, Coleman, and then you give Zary Coronado to work with Sharon Gorge.
I don't mind that idea. The only thing, and you know, maybe I'll, Shan, I'll get you to jump ahead. I'll get you to jump ahead a clip. I'll get you to play that second Huska clip on Coronado right here, because the big reason why I wonder about Coronado remaining on that line is because the Backlund line is going to be the number one or number two most used offensive, five-on-five line. Like, you take a look at usage on a night-to-night basis.
They're basically your shutdown line. You're going up against the other team's top forwards.
And you're also just, you're using them a lot. And I'm even going to take a pull the numbers from the game against Boston, for instance. But you know, that usage-wise, you could very easily make the argument that as much as we put Kadri as the top line on a depth chart, the Backlund line is the number one line because they're playing the most, and they did. They played 14-33 against Boston. The Huberdeau line played 13-21 against Boston, and the same was true against Florida. In terms of usage, the Backlund line is the number one line, and so faceoffs have been such an issue for this team.
Right.
This was Wes, the third member of our Flames Talk fam, asked.
You can call him number two. You can call him number two. I'll be the third.
He is currently the third member because he's not here.
Touche.
The third member of our trio, Wes Gilbertson, asked Ryan Huska on Thursday morning about, you know, the faceoffs have been a real issue. They don't have a lot of right-handed shots, period, on this team at forward. Would they start to use Matt, or are they going to think about starting to use Matt Coronado more in the faceoff dot? And Ryan Huska said, yes, absolutely.
We don't have that right-handed guy. And I think that a lot of the issues in the circle come from our lack of right-handed centermen, because we're forcing guys to have to take draws on their offside a lot of times. And teams know that, so they always put us on that side more often than not. Matt has taken draws before in the past. He's starting to take a few now for us. There's certain situations where, you know, Michael's such a smart player that if someone is beating him fairly consistently on that side, he'll let Matt go in and take the odd draw. And I think if that's something that we can continue to work with him on and help him build that part of his game up, it's a good thing. One, for power play. Two, for situational plays where teams are always trying to stick us on that side.
So that is the reason why I think keeping Coronado on the Backlund line makes more sense. Because I see the text line. A lot of people love that idea. And the Twitter loves that idea. Twitter's been, every time I post practice lines or morning skate lines, it's switch Coronado and Pelche. We want to see Coronado with Zary. And I get it. I really do get that idea. And I think there's a lot of wisdom to it. But because they don't have any right shot forwards, period, outside of Dewar right now.
Yeah, Coronado and Dewar are the only two.
And because Coronado has taken faceoffs before at different levels, he's played center before at different levels, and they need a right-handed guy to take faceoffs, I think having that guy who could be an option on your most used five-on-five line, that's a big reason why I'd keep Coronado for the time being on the Backlund line, because that's the line that you want to be winning face-offs the most, because they're the line that's playing the most at five-on-five, if that makes a lick of sense.
It makes 100% sense to me, because you don't have to look back too far. It was in the fourth minute of overtime. There was a defensive zone draw in the Flames' end, and it was Elias Lindholm on one side, and it was Matt Coronado winning the draw on his strong side, giving the Flames possession in what was a defensive zone situation. So I do think there's absolute merit to the thought of leaving Coronado there. particularly if you're going to be peppering the backline line with defensive zone starts like they always are. Part of the issue
you want
with,
that option
part
there,
of the
right?
part of the issue with faceoffs and why their percentage is so low is because Backlund takes so many draws on his weak side. If you can have Coronado out there at 50% being able to take draws on his strong side, suddenly you're limiting the opposition's options a little bit as to where they want to start when they get the opportunity to. So I get the theory behind having Coronado remain with Backlund for that faceoff flexibility. I just there's something sitting a little off with me with the Zeri line with Sharangovich and Pelche that I feel like if you're able to give Zeri a little bit more to work with on the offensive side, we might see him blossom and pop even more.
I do think Pelche is a great fit on that line. I really do. But that is the one rebuttal I have with that right-handed face-off guy and knowing how much face-offs have been an issue. This text comes in, says, boys, why can't they move Coronado up with Zeri and put Sharkey with Backlund and Coleman? Again, that is an area that Sharangovich
yeah.
is a left-handed. Thank you, Steve. That is very nice of you. Yeah, Sharangovich also a left-handed guy because of the shortage of right-handed shots. This says, I love that idea, Aaron, about flipping flipping Coronado with Pelche. And this says, the biggest weakness this team is scoring, not faceoffs. Zeri needs Coronado. That comes from Mick. Although Coronado, again, here's my other rebuttal to that. Coronado seems very comfortable playing the two-way game with Backlund and Coleman. The offense is coming there. And that's one of your biggest scoring threats right now, on pace for around 20 goals right now. Don't you want him playing a little bit more at 5-on-5? Like he's because that line is the number one most used line at 5-on-5. Don't you want Coronado there as opposed to clearly the Zeri line's the number three line? There's no doubt about that. That would be my one rebuttal to that because he is going to get more ice time playing with Backlund.
He will, but I think he can get more quality offensive time. That's not to say that Backlund Coleman don't, because we know what kind of play drivers they are in the sense of you start the sequence in your own end taking a draw, and for some reason, almost automatically, it always goes north to the offensive zone. I just think that the combination of Zeri Coronado is something I want to see. Listen, we know Sharangovich is struggling. We know Pelletier's he's been really good on this recall. I give him full marks for it, but I don't necessarily see him as a complement to Zeri when it comes to the blue line in the offensive game. And just having another weapon that can be effective for Connor Zeri, because I don't know where you are on this, but up until Kadri and Huberdeau being reunited and that clicking, for me, Zeri was the most dynamic player the Flames had had up until that point of the season. So to see Zeri, and again, I like Sharangovich, but it's not working for him right now. And I don't think Pelletier will ever be confused with an offensive dynamo, even though I do like the game that he's bringing right now. It's just more about Connor Zeri for me in terms of trying to make
right.
that swap.
And I think that's exactly the point that Mick's making in that regard. It's just because they have such a shortage of right-handed guys, the memo to Craig Conroy would probably be, and I think he'd be like, yeah, thanks, Steinberg.
Thanks, Tips.
Yeah, thanks, Tips. I think I know. But they need more right-handed forwards going forward. Like
preferably a center.
Rory Karens, not right-handed.
Sam Morton, not right-handed.
Andrew Bascha, not right-handed. Luke Misa, not
right-handed.
Is Greeden right-handed or left-handed?
I think he's left-handed as well. So there you go. You run through the prospect pool. And are you verifying that for me as I stall to think? Because I do think that he's a left-hand shot as well, if I'm remembering Penticton correctly.
Yep, left-winger. Left shot.
Yep. So even running through the prospect pool, there's not a whole lot of help on the way.
Remember growing up, and I don't know if this is the same for you, but growing up, everybody was right-handed. It was weird. It was weird in gym class when someone was a lefty, but in the NHL, the right having a right-handed shot is like a unicorn. Right side D-men have always been more, except on this team apparently, have always been more sought after over the last 15 years or so. Right shot centers are more. It's very strange because for me, right hand was always the majority growing up. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's a new one for me. I mean, I personally, I write right-handed but shoot left, and not that I played a high level, but I feel like most of our teams were always left-hand shots, but it is sort of interesting how, like, in theory, you should have a 50-50 shot. You either shoot left or you shoot right, but the dynamics of, man, there's a shortage on right shot D, as you mentioned, right shot centers, and you look at the Flames roster, certainly anywhere in the lineup, there's a little bit of a deficiency there.
Then I'll read you a few more texts. This says, like Cole Schwint. Yeah, that hurts. Yeah. The fact that they lost Cole Schwint on waivers as a right-handed, he would have been their only right-handed center. Now, he's not playing center very often in Vegas right now. He has been played as a winger a lot of the time. Ray in Calgary says, Pat, could they not have Coronado on the ice for D-zone faceoffs, then switch him off with Pelche when they get possession? Yes, they could. I don't know if that's ideal, if you want to be doing that every
all the time, yeah.
But it's something that you could do. And Mick says, I checked today, Roger McQueen is a righty. Mick's very adamant about
big draft guy,
Roger
Mick is.
Mick pays a lot of attention to the prospects.
Right on.
And has a lot of strong opinions on the prospects, which I appreciate. This says, think about the people in the world who are left-handed compared to the right-handed ones. Your dominant hand will control your stick better, which is why it's at the top of your stick. You have more with the right hand than your left. I think that's what he's trying to say. And I can't read that text, but it's pretty funny.
You can read it in the break,
yeah,
I hope.
I'll read it in the
break.
Thank
you, because
sure.
you broke right there.
It was pretty funny. There you go. That's the text line at 960-960. Then on the blue line right now, you know, you've got the forward groups that I think you've found two that you want to stick with for the time being, and at the very least, you found two duos and a one line that I think you want to stick with. You found the Backlund-Coleman duo. We've talked about that. Don't break that up. You've got the line with Kadri, Pospisil, and Huberdeau. I don't think you want to break that up. And then maybe some interchangeable parts in the bottom nine. On the blue line, we know that Ball Anderson is going to remain a pairing. Only the Ekholm Bouchard pairing has played more together at 5-on-5 this year than that line or than that pairing, and it's only by 2 minutes. Ekholm Bouchard have played 515 minutes and 54 seconds together at 5-on-5. Anderson Ball 513.57. The other D pairings that have played more than 500 minutes together: Ekblad Forsling in Florida, one of the best D pairings in the league; DeMello Morrissey in Winnipeg. Those are the only four pairings that have played more than 500 minutes together this year at 5-on-5. And so you're keeping that duo together for the time being, and we talked about this earlier this week on the roundtable. Hanley Weegar, I don't think you want to, you're not changing that for this game anyway, because they've played really well together for two straight games anyway. But, you know, the duo that I think has really helped stabilize this defense and give it a little bit more of a set-and-forget feel is, we know Pahal's been there on the right side all year, but Jake Bean finally settling in and kind of forging a spot for himself as the number three left side guy right now, that's been really important to this team stabilizing on defense. I know Wilsey threw out on Wednesday the idea of maybe at some point trying Bean with Weegar, and I really like that idea, but for the time being, him finally getting comfortable in his game. We're going to hear from him in just a second, but Bean and Pahal giving a little bit more stability on that third pairing has been really important.
Yeah, we talked Wednesday about Hanley Weegar, and it's been a small sample size, only 32 minutes, but that's the pairing, minimum 30 minutes, that we've seen this year that leads the team in expected goals at 55%, Wes. Corsi Ford at 59.6, but then you suddenly look at who's number two on those charts, and it's Bean Pahal. And they've given Calgary quality minutes. They maybe aren't the most impactful minutes in terms of generation and things of that sort, but at the same time, they're your third pair. You're not necessarily begging them to fill that role. So yeah, they've been quite steady for Calgary, for Ryan Huska. And again, it leads back to the conversation, the kickoff of the hour is, okay, were you surprised? Were you not surprised the Flames are rolling the same lineup out? Well, surprised in the sense that you're coming off of a loss where Boston had their way for the large part of two periods, but at the same time, one, what are you changing? And two, the things that you're probably looking at changing aren't things that you necessarily need to be changing because that's not the root cause.
Yep. So Braden Pahal gets himself a 2-year contract extension earlier this week. Jake Bean has settled into his role on his left side with Pahal on the right. Had a chance to chat with Jake a little bit on Wednesday after practice. Wanted to play this because it has been important that free agent signing like Bean has really started to become a whole lot more comfortable and is now turned into an everyday guy over the last month or so on this blue line. Here's our chat with Jake Bean from Wednesday.
I just wanted to ask you, first of all, about the extension for Braden. It's been your D partner for a good chunk of the year. How happy were you to see that for him?
Yeah, really happy. Patches is a guy who's had to work for everything that he has, and it's only going to continue. That's kind of how it works. He's an awesome guy, great player. So I'm excited for him. It's nice to kind of have that under your belt, so you can kind of just not think about it and just play. So I'm it's awesome.
I know that, you know, when guys like that, hardworking guys like that, when stuff like that gets announced, it always goes over really well in the room. How'd the group find out?
We had a meeting. Has just touched on it. Everyone's really happy for him. They see what he does on a day-to-day basis, so you know they know it's well deserved.
Okay, how are you feeling playing with him? It's been a good chunk of time with you and him together.
Yeah, it's been good. I think we complement each other well. We've kind of got better as the season's gone on, and our chemistry has been building. So it's been good. I feel like we have a lot more to give. I feel like we're creating a lot and been solid defensively, and stuff's not going in right now, but that's just the way it rolls, and things will turn tides if we kind of stick with it.
You feel like the style he plays, the style you play, a good complement for one another?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it definitely is. He's a heavy, hard guy, wins a lot of battles, and you know, he sees the ice pretty well too. He makes plays that people don't appreciate, and that makes it easy for me to jump up in the play, so it's been great.
You talk about how it feels like maybe you have had some opportunities. I mean, it feels like you've been all around it the last little bit. Are you feeling like it's pretty close for you in that regard?
Yeah, I feel like I've been all over here the last 6 or 7 games, getting lots of opportunities. Feel like I'm jumping in spots well. It's just a matter of time here. I think I just got to stick with it and trust it.
When you saw that one hit the post, kind of hit post crossbar last night, is that one of those eye roll moments?
Yeah, a little bit. It's been the second or third one of those here in the last little stretch. So just got to keep doing it, and it'll go in eventually.
How are you feeling just overall about your game and kind of the consistency in your game?
Yeah, really good. You know what? I think there's definitely an adjustment period for me to kind of come into my hometown team and get comfortable with everyone. It's one thing to watch a team your whole life and then be on it. It's just a little bit different feeling. So I feel like I'm more comfortable with the guys, more comfortable around the room and on the ice, and I think that's showing on the ice.
What are like the adjustment period, all those things that go into it? Like what are some of the things that you had to kind of get used to that maybe you weren't even prepared for?
I think it's mostly just an overall comfortability kind of day to day. You got to be focused on all the little finer points, just to kind of keep up with a new system, new players, new coaches. That can take you away from the game that you want to play, and I feel like I'm kind of settled into that, and I can just kind of be myself.
That's Jake Bean. Had a chance to chat with him a little earlier this week on Wednesday, actually, after practice. He's really started to settle in, hasn't he? And that's been a big part of this team stabilizing a little bit on the back end. You know, now, and you're just trying to find the right partner for Mackenzie Weegar. The last two games, it's been Hanley, and maybe at some point that guy is Bean, and you're looking at somebody else. They need more right shot forwards. They need more left shot D.
What a conundrum, Patrick.
Right?
How are we going to work our way around
it? I don't
know. But yeah, Bean was a little up and down to start the season, and part of that, as you mentioned, as you asked him and talked about, is getting acclimatized to a new team, not necessarily a new city, but a new team, new surroundings, new teammates, all that. For the most part, he's really settled in over the course of the last, you know, half dozen games or so.
We are underway as we are here at the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome this hour on Flames Talk. Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, everything is being produced back at the downtown studio. It's the Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, now our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Thursday edition of the program. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers here in the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. So is Derek Wills, the voice of the Calgary Flames, to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. One thing we did not talk much about in the first half of this hour, we talked a lot about Calgary's ideal lineup and are they getting closer to that ideal lineup. We did not talk about the Thursday night goaltending decision against the Ottawa Senators. Let me tell you, it's not going over very well on social media, Calgary's decision to start Dan Vladar. Dan Vladar will get the start against Ottawa. So, gents, what... social media didn't like it. Where are we on the decision to go with Vladar between the pipes tonight?
I'm not taking a run at anybody in particular, but let me ask you a question. Mm. If Dustin Wolfe started in 81 of the 82 regular season games, do you think they would complain about him not starting in that 82nd game?
Maybe.
Literally just wrote down social media would start Wolf 82 games. Literally right there. So when you open with that, you just trimmed 15 seconds off my argument.
Thank goodness for that.
Use those 15 seconds so we're no further ahead. But listen, I get
Drive
it. Dustin Wolf is the most exciting goaltending prospect that this team has had. I was going to say since Mika Kiprusoff, but...
he was 29 or 28, yeah, yeah. I mean, or 27, whatever it was.
Maybe ever. Maybe going back to Mike Vernon.
I was going to say, Vernon or Trevor Kidd would have been like in terms of the... Trevor Kidd was a first-round pick in the mid-90s or early 90s. He would probably be the last time they've had a goaltending prospect this exciting. With no disrespect to Leland Irving, who is a first-round pick as well, I don't think ever had the same type of buzz around him that Dustin Wolf has had since basically his first year in the organization.
And really, it's the organization's first opportunity to have a homegrown number one goaltender in decades. So I get why fans are so excited about Dustin Wolf, but we knew this was going to be a tandem. And we knew that at the end of the day, or at the end of the season, that if both guys were healthy and playing reasonably well, that they would probably split the games. Not necessarily 41 and 41, but I didn't expect one guy to get 55 starts, that's for sure. And Dustin Wolf's been really good, especially on home ice. You look at the home and road splits, 8-1-1, two shutouts, 1.87 goals against average, and 942 save percentage in 10 home games. And I don't know what's up on the whiteboard in the coach's office, but I'm guessing they've got him penciled into play in the finale of this five-game homestand and in the team's final game before Christmas on Saturday afternoon. So what if I asked you guys how much weight you would put into, or how much weight you think Flames coaches put into, a goaltender's record against a particular opponent?
I think in cases like this, I think it's something that does play significantly into their decision-making.
For me, it would be sample size-based, depending on how many games they've had. If we're talking about two or three games, that might not necessarily be enough of a sample size. But, hey, if a goalie's feeling it against the opposition, the numbers back it up, why not?
I've just talked to enough coaches that they take that even on a one- or two-game sample size. Jason LaBarbera, Jordan Sigalet, Ryan Huska, like they take that stuff into account, especially when it's close, right?
And we're talking about one- and two-game sample sizes here, so it is a small sample size, but in two career games against the Senators, Dustin Wolf, 0-2-0, with a 4.11 goals against average and an .882 save percentage, and Dan Vladar, in one career game against the Sens, stopped all 27 shots for his first career shutout in the Flames' 4-0 victory in Ottawa over the Senators way back when, on November 14th of 2021.
I guarantee you they looked at that and that played a non-insignificant part in their decision-making for tonight.
Yeah, so I get why they're going with Dan Vladar. I also get why fans are so excited about Dustin Wolf.
Well, and just to further the point, I think, you know, Dustin Wolf has the shutout 2 games ago. You automatically go with the guy who's coming off of a shutout. And for me, Wolf might have been the biggest reason Calgary escaped Boston with a point. Things weren't going Calgary's way for probably 35 minutes of that game. Once you got past the quick 2 goals Calgary scored to take a 2-0 lead, It was a lot of Boston, a lot of Boston, a lot of Boston the rest of the way. So I can understand, well, Wolf didn't get the win, but he got you a point, so why not go back to him? But listen, we all kind of understood that this was going to be a platoon situation for much of the season. As we sit on December 19th, each guy started 16 games, so right down the middle. And if you're not coming off of a win, if you're not coming off of a shutout, chances are you're going to see the other guy go. So for me, when Dustin Wolf hit the ice first for morning skate Thursday morning, wasn't a surprise because, all right, well, the guy that usually hits the ice first is the guy that's backing up and is getting in the early extra work, and then the starter rolls out to the starter's net. It wasn't a shock that Dan Vladar was the starter against Ottawa.
No, I'll be honest with you guys. I came in at about 10 a.m. on Thursday morning, and I was expecting to see Dustin Wolf doing the early work, and there he was. It just was like, hey, not. I'm completely with you. I think, you know, had the Flames won that game in overtime Tuesday, Dustin Wolf was in as one of the three stars, because I'm with you. I thought he was one of the massive reasons why they were able to even get that thing to overtime without losing the point in regulation. Thought he was dynamite in that game, and obviously had the shutout against Florida the game before. But this remains a tandem, and I understand how good Dustin Wolf has been at home. And you know what? Odds are he's going to start against Chicago in the finale before Christmas on Saturday afternoon. In fact, short of a shutout for Vladar in this game, I think you can pen in Wolf against Chicago because they don't get the full rest. It's kind of a day and a half as opposed to the two-day turnaround because it's the afternoon game against Chicago. So I think you can basically take to the bank outside of a Vladar shutout Thursday that Wolf goes on Saturday. And that would end up being a situation where Wolf gets the majority of the games on this homestand. This remains a tandem. And that's why I think it's so important that you don't go too long between starts for either guy. And even when a guy is on a roll, you still sneak in games for the other one either way. And I just think that remains the number one reason why they've had so much success in net. I'll read this text to you, Wilsey, and I'm exactly on this side of it. Going back and forth is literally the secret sauce to them being in a playoff position by points percentage. So earned, not given. I do think flip-flopping, I do think alternating, I do think being very deliberate in having both guys worked in is important. I know there's a discrepancy between save percentages. Take out the game against Tampa, though, and it's a whole lot closer. And also, Kevin Woodley, who's going to join us to kick off the second hour of Flames Talk, a lot of the goalie metrics that are a little more telling for a lot of goalie people have these guys very close to one another in terms of what they've been able to do. So I just think, Wilsey, it's crucial to continue making this a tandem. It's crucial for Wolf's development. It's crucial for allowing Wolf to succeed in his first year in the NHL. Man, I have no problem with them going to Vladar in this game against Ottawa.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. So the last time Dan Vladar played was 1 week ago, and it was not a good game for him. It was a worse game for the forwards and defensemen in front of him.
Yeah.
An 8-3 loss to the Lightning.
That was a lot of 2-on-1s, 1-on-0s, backdoor tap-ins. That was Vladar hung out to dry.
Yeah, I'm not holding the goaltender responsible for what happened last Thursday night. He did give up a career-high 8 goals on 26 shots in that game, and then he got a little banged up late in that game, so didn't actually dress for Saturday's game. So do you really want Dan Vladar to go into an extended Christmas break? The Flames have 6 days between games once they wrap up their pre-Christmas schedule on Saturday afternoon. Do you really want him to go into the Christmas break off of an 8-goal-against performance? I don't. I want to keep the confidence of both of my goaltenders high. I want to keep both guys feeling good and playing lots of games. So I think it was a no-brainer to go to Dan Vladar for this game against the Senators tonight. And unless he gets a shutout, I probably go right back to Dustin Wolf for the finale of the homestand on Saturday afternoon.
And Wilsey, to your point, him coming off a shutout in the last time he played Ottawa, I can concede that would make sense to go on a smaller sample size, just considering, lights out against them.
Long time ago, though.
True.
It is what it is.
But they look at those things, yep. And those things count when they're making decisions. I know that. It's the Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Vickers and Steinberg on this Thursday. Okay, no changes outside of goaltending for the game against the Senators, which means third straight game Andre Kuzmenko will sit out as a healthy scratch. Like, when is the right time to bring him back in? When is the right time to slot him back into the lineup? I know that there's been a lower body injury, so maybe he's not a healthy scratch. Maybe it's still an injury situation. But when is the right time? He's done practice in full morning skate, did the bag skate on Thursday, so it looks like he's pretty darn close to being back to 100% if he's not already. So what is there an ideal or an easy time for you to get him back in?
I actually wondered if he'd be back in tonight. Watching practice yesterday, I wondered if tonight might be the night Andre Kuzmenko was back to, or at least close to 100%, and was given another opportunity to turn his season around. And listen, from Ryan Huska down to the assistant coaches, they've all talked about the importance of getting Andre Kuzmenko going. And I think it's important from a couple of different perspectives. Number one, this is a Flames team that struggles to score goals. And Andre Kuzmenko in his first two NHL seasons scored 39 and 22 goals respectively. The guy can put the puck in the net. I know he's only got one goal this season, but if he can figure it out, I think he'd really help the team offensively. That's more of a short-term look at things. The longer-term look at things, guys, is he's going to be impossible to trade unless he starts to play a lot better. He's making $5.5 million this season. But if he can find his game and start scoring goals, I think there's a chance the Flames could flip him between now and the NHL's trade deadline and get a pick and or a prospect in return for him, because teams are always looking for offensive depth, defensive depth, all kinds of depth approaching the trade deadline. And teams also always think they can fix players. I've seen it time and time again, and I've got to think there are some teams out there that if Andre Kuzmenko figures it out, will roll the dice on him and believe that they can get him turned around, or they can make him even more productive than he would be had he turned around with the Flames. So I was wondering if tonight would be the night. Clearly that's not going to be the case, but thinking about the Flames and their bottom six, for me, Walker Dewar's games dropped off a little bit. I thought he was really good when he first got recalled. I don't think he's been quite as effective in the last couple of games. So let's see how tonight's game goes. If Dewar has a good game, I think he becomes tough to take out. And with the way Jacob Pauce has been playing, I think he's already tough to take out. But I also think that there are a handful of players on a short leash, and if somebody has an off night, it might open the door for number 96.
You mentioned that Kuzmenko can put the puck in the net. Right now he can't put the puck on net, which is the glaring issue that the coaching staff and management have had. For me, just the way the schedule shakes down and knowing that he's sort of been trying to shake off something a little nagging, I look at December 28th against San Jose. I give him the full Christmas break, get away from the game, a little bit of a mental reset, but declare, and you lay, if you haven't already, you would lay this plan out to him well in advance so he's not wondering day in, day out if he's getting back and getting deflated if he's not back in. But if you can give him a couple days over the Christmas break where you're going to have a full week between actual games, you tell them now, hey, that December 28th game, that's the game you've got to be ready for. You're going in there, and we're using this break as a mental reset for you.
Let me throw this at you. Do you know the only team that Kuzmenko has scored against this year is the Chicago Blackhawks? He scored the game winner against them early in the year against Chicago. That next game they play on Saturday afternoon is against Chicago. And while I get what you're saying, I wonder if you get him back in, And if that's the plan. Obviously, if things go really well against Ottawa and you just want to keep it the same, you can do that. But, you know, you could have a plan in the back of your head to say, look, let's get him back in for the game against Chicago. That's one of the worst teams in the NHL right now. That's not a team that defends very well. And obviously, you don't want to overlook them if you're the Flames. But you can look at it and say, maybe that's the type of game that Kuzmenko could thrive in. And then, good or bad, you can send him with some things into the Christmas break. Like, hey, we need more of this from you. You know, we didn't see you shooting it enough to this afternoon against Chicago, or we like the way you were shooting it and putting pucks on net. Do more of that. You know, give him a little bit of a taste again going into the break and see if that can get him a little hungrier coming out of it. So I actually think you've got an interesting opportunity. I'm with you, Wilsey. I thought this game against Ottawa might be the time to do it. Vickers and I talked about that quite a bit on Wednesday's show. It's not going to be against Ottawa, but I do wonder if Chicago's a good time to bring him back in. Now, Ottawa's rolling, and all of a sudden, they're not an also-ran in the Eastern Conference. Chicago, they are, and that might be a decent spot to get him in.
And I give Andre Kuzmenko credit. This is a really important season for him. If he wants to stay in the National Hockey League and making anywhere close to the type of money that he's making right now, he's going to have to be great in the second half of the season. He isn't fantastic defensively, we know that, but I think you can overlook that if he's fantastic offensively and he has the ability to be that type of player. He could be down in the dumps right now. He could be feeling sorry for himself right now, and maybe he is. But if he is, he's not letting us see it. Watching him at the morning skate today, guys, he was full of energy, had a smile on his face, was laughing and joking with teammates. I'm not sure if he was looking for a hug, but he was trying to hug everybody who he could. And who doesn't need a hug or want a hug? So I give Andre Kuzmenko a lot of credit for staying positive and keeping his head up during what has been a really tough start to the season for him, and also for putting in the work at practice. He's been working on a shot. We saw him working on a shot today. We saw Yegor Sharangovich at the same time on the other side of the ice working on his shot today. Yep. So, you know, these guys who we know can score goals and do it at a really high level in this league who haven't been, Kuzmenko more so than Sharangovich, obviously, they're putting in the work, they're trying to figure it out, and they're trying to find ways to help their team win hockey games. So maybe it's Saturday afternoon against the Blackhawks, but to your point, Aaron, if the Flames have a good game tonight and if nobody really gives the choice to the coach to take them out because of the way they played and the way the team played, then maybe a bit of an extended break over Christmas wouldn't be the worst thing for Andre Kuzmenko.
The one thing you do have to give him credit for, and you mentioned it, Wilsey, is he has not made this a distraction for the Flames to this point. And eventually, if it's game after game after game after game after game, it eventually becomes a story. But for now, he's doing all the right things to make sure that it isn't. Yep. So credit to him on that.
All right, that's your Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, as we start to wrap things up this hour. Thanks to Shan Taylor back in the Groundworks Downtown Studio, our producers this hour. We're here at the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. And as we wrap up this hour, the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.